Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
2-1 pitch. Fly ball to left field, plenty deep. Back is Kristen Stewart to the wall and gone! A three-run homer for the rookie Reynolds. Anchor down and bombs away. It's his sixth in the big leagues, and the Pirates have come all the way back. The Buccos lead the Tigers 8-7 in the sixth.
There you go, Bob Uner. That one's for you.
Oh, is that sweet? Steve and Kevin, those Buccos finally win a game. I think it's the second one in the season they've won, actually, in Pittsburgh, but better things coming.
It is the biggest, it is the largest comeback by the Pirates in a game.
Yeah.
7-1 since 2006.
Wow. And, okay. And it's done by a rookie.
Well, it's going to have to be done by somebody because
yeah, they don't get
right,
much.
Right. Okay. Here's the problem you have image wise with the team. There are several areas image wise. And look, I'm not going to let's not get into the effort because I'm sure no matter what, you've got people that are working hard, trying hard. I got that. But here's the problem you have image wise with the club. When you're sitting there and you have Corey Dickerson, and now Dickerson's been out, he's been hurt. But he is an established, really good major league player. Now, the Pirates have the third worst record in the National League. So maybe the thought process is, like in the case of Phil Kessel, right? Why would the Penguins think about dealing Phil Kessel? Because they don't want to deal Crosby and they don't want to deal Malkin, but they think they can get the most value to improve the team from Phil Kessel. So maybe in the case of Dickerson, the idea is, here's a guy that we can get value for that down the road can improve the club. All right, I can accept that conversation. All right, but when you make the statement that we would probably deal Dickerson because Melky Cabrera is playing so well. All right, now, I've got a problem with that for this reason. That means that the guy who had his best season ever and then was suspended 6 weeks after the All-Star game for PED use, you're keeping, right? Along with your center fielder, who got suspended for 80 games for PED use, that's not the image I want to project. That's not what I want to project, right? And I realize that these guys are tested over and over again. So, look, I mean, I'm all for giving people second chances. But you're going to deal the guy that has never been an issue versus two guys who have been issues?
Yeah.
No, that's not good image-wise. Now, the young part is this. The Pirates have this issue. Yeah, they're playing a lot of young players. Newman's not a bad player. In fact, I announced Kevin Newman's first professional home run when he was at West Virginia, hit into the bullpen in left field. All right? So, I mean, I watched him go through the ranks. He was a first-round pick, I want to say, out of Arizona. But when you look at, let's just take three outstanding teams, the last two world champions in the Yankees. Well, let's look at the Astros. Okay. You've got Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman. I mean, you start going through the list of the guys. The Yankees. Okay. You've got Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, Gleyber Torres. Right? You go through the list of players they have. The Red Sox, Andrew Benintendi, Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, Christian Vasquez. What do all of those players have in common? They were all drafted by those teams, and they all came up through the system. Guess what? with the exception of Correa, who was the first overall pick in the draft, the Pirates could have drafted any of those players. Right? What's happened is this. You could talk about the money that is spent. Oh, look, they got the highest payroll in baseball. They bought J.D. Martinez. Okay. Guess what? They have outdrafted you. Okay? They have out-evaluated you. Right? The draft is absolutely critical to the Pirates' success. It is critical. There's more pressure on them and Tampa Bay and some other Kansas City to draft right and develop right than there is on, say, let's the Yankees, Red Sox, or Astros. They can fill in the gaps. But you look at the Cubs. The Cubs are another team. Javier Baez, Chris Bryant, I mean, Schwarber. They drafted all those guys. They outdrafted you. And they outdeveloped you. And there's more pressure on you to outdraft them and outdevelop them, and you can't. Now, they can fill in gaps. The Cubs can sign a John Lester. The Astros can trade for and get a Justin Verlander. The Yankees can trade for Giancarlo Stanton. The Red Sox can sign J.D. Martinez. So they can get the last pieces to the puzzle. Okay? They can do that. But the bottom line is the core group that they have that are some of their biggest stars, you could have drafted and you bypassed for somebody else. And that's where I think the disconnect is happening for Pirates fans right now, because there's more pressure on them to draft well, just like Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Miami. They've all got to draft really, really well. And yet the better teams are out-drafting them.
And, you know, the fan base of Pirate fans across the universe have nothing but contempt for Nutting, Bob Nutting, the owner, and for Huntington, the general manager. I mean, there's just nobody who defends them or stands up for them or even says they're good guys.
Well, I will stand up for Neil Huntington in this regard. Remember, Neil Huntington is doing what he's...
Well, what the boss
is doing
says.
What the job description says. The job description says this is your budget, make a team. Well, you know, now you're going to be the one that's going to take the heat. You're the one that's going to have to answer the questions. You're the one that's going to have to do the press conferences. All right? You're just doing what you were told to do. All right? And now, can they do a better job of talent evaluation? I mean, Tyone made the major leagues. And Tyone, to me, is a guy that can be a potential ace. But he's on the 60-day IL, and as Jerry Tipolo told me yesterday from the Trib, he's probably out the rest of the year. Okay. He's probably out the rest of the year. But look at all the other, quote, high school pitchers the Pirates have drafted. They've drafted one high school pitcher after another. And where are they? Where?
The cynic in me says McDonald's, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, but they're all like...
Yeah.
And they did it again this year, another high school arm. I'm looking at the draft saying, why aren't you drafting this guy, and this guy? I don't get it.
I don't see where they
go with it.
They don't seem to be going to the college level and picking somebody that was doing well at, say, the University of North Carolina, places like that. Now, Newman, I think, came out of Vanderbilt. I could be wrong on that.
Arizona. Came out of Arizona.
One of their players. Yeah,
Pedro Alvarez came out of Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and they've gotten one or two, but I think predominantly they go to the 18-year-old phenom out of Watsamata High School in Frostbite Falls, Minnesota. So,
and you just don't know when you draft the high school kid. You really don't know what you're getting. Now, look at the Phillies. All right, the Phillies, Bohm, who, by the way, we were talking about him last night. I guess Bohm is now up in high A, I believe. All right, and he's tearing the cover off the ball, the kid out of Wichita State. Now, they moved him to first base. One of the prerequisites to being a third baseman is you have to have the ability to bend over. Okay? Well,
it does help.
He's so stiff over there. I kept watching him thinking, what are you doing? Well, they moved him to first base. He's hitting the ball really, really well. Adam Haseley out of Virginia is already with them and has been starting in center field. Okay. But who hasn't made progress? It seems to be stalled. It's the high school kid, Mickey Moniak, they picked first overall. I mean, right now, he's kind of stalled. I don't know if Joe's got it here or not. As to where is Moniak right now, Joe? Joe's going to look it up. Putnam's up here. I've got my own personal Google up here.
Hey, yeah. By the way, Steve, a quick news
where
flash.
Is he? Redding, so he's in double A. Mickey Moniak's in double A. Now, what's he hitting? Is he hitting over 260?
Yeah, 261.
261. See, am I good or what?
Oh, you nailed it. Steve, we do have a news flash from the Women's World Cup of Soccer. The Swedish team playing the USA right now, they're all blonde. Every one of them.
And Team USA is now taking a 2-0 lead. Tobin Heath with a goal.
Okay, now that's the part I thought was more important. What's the score? Okay, that's to be honest with you. Yeah, the other part, okay, whatever. Yeah, so it's 2-0. How deep into this now? They must be at least into the 60th or 70th minute, right?
Right now, 57th minute.
Yeah, close to 60.
A little more 10 minutes into the second half.
So, big win today if they can maintain this 2-goal lead.
Keeping tabs on the Dutch, too. Dutch are 3-0, so they're another one clear 3-0 going into the next round.
Well, now we're going to go into Austin Powers about the Dutch.
No.
Look, it's interesting about women's soccer when it comes to the United States women's soccer team. I think they're more popular than the guys in this country. I think this is what I refer to as the UConn women's basketball effect. They won.
Absolutely.
And not only do they win, not only have they won, they've won, three World Cups, they won the gold medal. All right. They've been winning while the U.S. men, if they advance and win a match, they want to have a parade. All right.
Well, okay. The men's team did not even make the last World Cup, for heaven's sakes. They lost to Guatemala and the Seychelles Islands, I think.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, Trinidad. I mean, it was like crazy.
Same thing.
Something like a little more than 600 days ago. And they just played, they just opened up Copa America play earlier this week. They did get a win. But, you got Christian Pulisic now back with Team USA, but you've got... You know, guys, that's the first time seven or eight of those players in the starting 11 never played with each other before.
Yeah.
Well, but there's something more to it that I want to say about that. The style of play for American women's soccer is exciting to watch. It is dynamic.
No question.
They attack. Yeah, well, they surrender a goal. Sure, they'll surrender a goal. But they're always trying to tilt the pitch all the time. The guys are cautious. You know? And it's the state of the world game anyway.
Yeah.
But a little more cautious, a little more defensive. And if you want entertainment, that really draws the viewer in. Let's get everyone knows, you guys know, I talk about the casual fan all the time.
Sure.
The casual fan makes the difference between a good rating and a great rating. The casual fan makes the difference between a good attendance and a great attendance. Right?
Well,
so the casual fan is watching the U.S. women's soccer team play, and guess what? They're fun. They're fun to watch. They're dynamic. They're exciting. Meanwhile, the men's team, and look, you've got to go with the style that gives you the best chance. So please, I'm not criticizing coaching at all, and I understand what they're trying to do. But from a stylistic point of view, they're more cautious, more defensive. That doesn't draw the casual fan in. It draws the real soccer fan in, the fanatic.
Yep.
All right? It draws, they're going to be there no matter what. Okay, they want to win, and whatever style it takes, they're all for. But if you want to get more people watching, boy, I'll tell you, the way the women play, they get more people to watch them because they're dynamic.
Steve, here are the stats from the first half of the USA-Sweden game. Possession, the USA, 60% of the time they had possession. shots on goal, 13 for the USA, 4 for Sweden, which means they just sucked the air out of the room, so to speak, on the Swedish offense. They just kept the ball away from them. And, you know, they've got that great passing game, looking for the open player, and great success. There was a game in Pittsburgh after the last World Cup for the women's team, and they packed the stadium.
They're that popular.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and look, you know who the players are. I mean, you know who Alex Morgan is. She's established a great name. Megan Rapinoe, everybody knows who she is. I think Rose Lavelle, I think people are starting to get to know her. But now, Allie Krieger from Penn State played the other day. My guess is Allie's not playing today.
She's been on the championship teams before.
Yeah,
she did not start.
Nor is she going to play. I'm going to guess Sauerbrunn's playing today, though.
I believe so.
And of course, Alyssa Nayer in goal is Penn State.
Yep, Sauerbrunn is in the starting 11. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's because she's probably the best defender they have.
And
I mean, she did not play in the matchup against Thailand. They went 13-0. She didn't play.
Didn't really need to in that game.
Didn't need to, but I think they were trying to nurse her back from an injury or something like that. Now, of course, you get to the big matchup with Sweden. That tells you exactly where you are and what your lineup is. This now becomes you're at the point now where, and I've talked about this many times in many sports, where the trust factor comes into play. Which 11 do I trust the most? And that's what it comes down to. Sometimes you may, how come they're not playing this ultra-talented individual over here? They may not trust them yet.
Yeah.
Or in this game, they may not trust her yet. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome back. Yes. There's a reason why Sean is playing Petula Clark and Downtown. And the reason he is playing Downtown is because Bob and his beautiful bride went to Toronto to see Petula Clark in concert.
Oh, is she magnificent and 86 years young.
86?
Absolutely. It was stunning. And she looks like, no joke, 55 years old, 56 years old, put on a two-hour performance with a 10-minute break in between her and a five-piece backup band. She just enthralled several thousand people, including two from Danville, Pennsylvania.
86 years
old. No joke, yeah. November 15, 1932.
And Steve, and for the listeners, during World War II, she traveled England with one of her best friends growing up to sing concerts to raise money for war bonds to aid the war effort. Her best friend, Julie Andrews. Kind of...
It's interesting. I saw an interview with Julie Andrews the other night.
Wow.
It was actually with Diane Sawyer. It was probably an older interview at the time. It was amazing how I found her to be incredibly humble. Because it was a special on The Sound of Music, and Christopher Plummer, it was also involved in this.
Yeah, he played in music.
And Christopher
movie.
Yeah, he said there was the scene where they argue. All right, and he said the problem is that Julie is not confrontational and doesn't get angry. And so he wasn't kidding. He said, you know what it took to get us to get her mad and be angry?
Probably choke her puppy or something. I mean, to get her.
Well, no, they told her that if she wasn't, she'd have to buy digital media. All right, so I mean, and that's just.
We understand that problem.
suddenly we relate completely to the audience.
Yes, exactly. So, Steve, you have a doubleheader tonight in State
College? Double dip tonight. Yep, double dip tonight.
Oh, two seven-inning games with the Spikes?
Bark in the Park.
Yeah, Bark in the Park night tonight.
Oh,
you bring your dog to the game.
Oh.
Hope it doesn't thunder and lightning.
Yeah. Meanwhile, down here...
Actually, the weather right now is okay.
Well, good.
It's not down here because Kevin and Mark Lawrence are out gathering pairs of animals as we speak.
2 by 2.
Yeah.
It was downpouring here at the studio about 2:30 as you were getting here.
Yeah, a monster flood.
Yeah.
Steve, take care.
So they sent Kevin out 2 by 2?
Yes. He came back with 2 iguanas so far. That's it. Steve, have a great week.
Did I ever tell you this? Ever tell you a story? Mexico, they're like iguanas, monkeys, things like that. There was this animal walking, and it was early evening.
No.
And we could see it from a distance. I looked at Dick. I said, "What's that?" Dick looks at it and goes, "It's an aardvark." I said, "An aardvark?" And of course, I think it was a monkey. He goes, "No, it's an aardvark." He said, "Why do you think it's an aardvark?" He says, "Because I say so."
That's the one and only Girardi.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Final half hour of the show. Great to have you with us with the NBA draft coming up tonight. Looking forward to that. Our thanks to Bob Buhner. Great to have Bob on the show today. Appreciate it very much. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to have Phil Steele is going to join us to talk about college football. Also, we're going to review our interview with John Urschel and Tony Knopp on tomorrow's show heading into the weekend. The NBA draft will be tonight. The first pick will belong to the New Orleans Pelicans. There will be no surprise whatsoever. It's going to be Zion Williamson. The second pick will go to the Memphis Grizzlies. Probably no surprise there, especially after the Mike Conley trade to Utah, that the Grizzlies will take Ja Morant out of Murray State. Conley, of course, had been with the Grizzlies for 12 years. He averaged 21 points a game when he was there. And it seems like it was just yesterday he was playing in the Jordan Center against Penn State when he was at Ohio State, the 1 year he was there with Greg Oden and Daquan Cook. And I remember Mike Walker took a three-point shot from midcourt to win the game. It was a game on Valentine's Day, as a matter of fact. There had been a snowstorm, the whole deal across the board. And Penn State almost won the darn thing. Oden ended up being the first overall pick in the draft. I can't remember where Conley was picked. I wanted somewhere between 4 and 7. And then Daquan Cook, I think, was the 12th overall pick in the draft. I mean, that team was loaded. Obviously, the microfracture surgery knocked Oden out in his career. Conley went on to have a fabulous career. Cook actually had a very serviceable NBA career, but Conley ended up having a fabulous career. Now he's got a real opportunity, especially with Donovan Mitchell playing at Utah. So that means that second overall pick, with Conley being moved and creating cap space, Ja Morant will be the selection there. Look for R.J. Barrett of Duke to be the third overall pick. And then at that point, it becomes interesting because New Orleans has the 4th overall pick again. That's because of the Anthony Davis trade. And this is where it gets interesting, and it might be Darius Garland, who was scheduled to play this year at Vanderbilt. Maybe. So the NBA, which has done a great job of seizing the news cycle, the way baseball used to a long time ago. The NBA now, the offseason, with free agent moves, max contracts, the draft, which is tonight, they own the cycle. And with that, we go to Keith Smith, RealGM.com, also a contributor to Yahoo Sports. Keith, welcome back. It is great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the big post news, and that, of course, is the Anthony Davis trade. Look, there's Ingram in here, there's Ball in here, 2 previous top 5 picks. There's also 3 future number 1 picks. What was your thought on the parts and pieces to this trade, which should be official by July 6th?
Yeah, it was one of those deals where, as the terms came out, it just kind of kept getting better and better for the Pelicans. with each piece that was released, we would hear they added this pick and then these protections, which actually work in their favor because it could delay these picks until LeBron James is post-prime. There are all these factors in there that just kept slanting it more New Orleans way. But now here with a day or two of hindsight, and all the full picture of the trade, I still feel good about it for both sides. The Pelicans obviously had to move Davis. He didn't want to be there anymore. And I feel like this is a trade that the Lakers had to make. They, in effect, tossed away year 16 of LeBron James last season, and you couldn't go into this year with any chance of tossing away year 17 of LeBron James. So this is a good deal for both teams, one of those rare win-win trades, at least on its face, years before we can fully evaluate it.
My evaluation of James and Kyrie Irving, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but they're two guys that really need to have the ball in their hands. I get the sense that Anthony Davis is not that kind of guy, and if that is the case, does that make this possibility mesh even better? One guy that really has to be effective with the ball and one that can be without.
Yeah, it's that old adage, right? There's only one basketball, no matter how good everybody can be with it. And in this case, Anthony Davis is a guy who, he's great in pick and roll. He's great as a roll man. He's great at stepping back and shooting jump shots. He's really good as a spot-up shooter. And he's great as a dive man coming in off the weak side or off of set plays and those kind of things. So Frank Vogel, the new Lakers head coach, he's going to have a lot of fun drawing up ways to take advantage of Davis's, fairly unique offensive skill set for a guy who's a 6'11" center. Now, for James, he's always had the ball in his hand, and that's probably not going to change at this point in his career. He's going to be that guy who's going to do most of facilitating of the offense. So it's important you get the right kind of guys around them. They still do need somebody who can be a secondary playmaker, a secondary point of attack guy, but they've got a lot of roster spots to fill and a good amount of money to do it if they go that route, or are they going to go the full star route, and then we'd have to fill it out with lesser options for the minimum and exceptions and the like.
The move that was made, look, Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram are not grizzled veterans in all of this. Does this in the end put maybe a little more pressure on Zion Williamson, yes or no?
No, I don't think so. I think part of the reason why the Pelicans could make this trade and delay so many of these assets to later years is because they don't have any real pressure as a franchise right now, because what you're looking at, is if you're the Pelicans, you're kind of saying, well, we've got the new franchise guy coming in Zion. That's the guy we're going to build around. That's what everybody's excited about. So you kind of, as odd as it may seem, as you see usher one franchise player out the door, your new one's coming in right on the heels, and that kind of buys you almost a couple years of grace period.
Okay. The Raptors became the first team since the turn of the century to win a title and not have a, quote, lottery pick on the roster. When you look at roster construction, what kind of job did they do? And especially just saying, hey, look, I know maybe you're only here 1 year, but what does it tell everybody about their desire to win that they said yes to Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah, I think there's a couple pieces there. So Masai Ujiri did a great job of identifying players later in the draft, guys like Pascal Siakam, Norman Powell, Fred VanVleet as an undrafted player. He did a really good job, plucking those guys and putting that all together. Now, on the flip side, they went all in. They believed that they were close with the guys that they had, and they needed something to push them over the top. And I love it whenever a general manager says, we're close, we're going to go get the guy we think that can put us over the top. And that's exactly what the Raptors did. So, kudos to them, because not only did they do it with Kawhi, but then they did it in season when they went and got Marc Gasol as well. They just kind of kept adding and were never satisfied until they were really out of time to add players to the roster. And that's a big, benefit to the front office, that Masai was given that go-ahead by their ownership group to say, all right, we're right here, why not us? Go get these guys and see if we can get this done.
Okay, so now they've constructed, there's copycats in every league. Is there something about the Toronto model that you think one or two people might consider
going copycat, or is it just a one-off and they just were able to pull it off the way they did it?
Yeah, I think it's more of a one-off. We're hearing a lot of things today about, or really it's been the last week since they won the championship, about how one or two stars isn't going to do it. Look at Toronto. They had everybody contributing up and down the roster. Well, that conveniently overlooks that they had four players on the roster that made in excess of $20 million this year. And part of the reason why they were able to get Kawhi Leonard was because they had DeMar DeRozan on a $25 million contract as a trade piece. So they had paid, they just maybe necessarily didn't pay the right guys to carry themselves there until they got Kawhi. So I think the model is still you have to go get the most talent possible, and that's whether you do that by a trade or via free agency, and you're going to have to pay a lot of money to get there. And that's something that, you know, the Warriors, we can't throw away what they've done over the last 5 years here, because they're still, you know, in a lot of ways, they built the model of how you get to the finals.
And speaking of the Warriors, okay, quote, where to from here? I mean, because obviously we know that Kevin Durant is a free agent. Klay Thompson has a torn ACL. What kind of decisions does Bob Myers have to make right now, and what kind of capital does he have to make those decisions?
Yeah, well, the capital is not much. Their best bet at this point seems to be to go ahead and re-sign Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson and wait it out a year, because otherwise what you're looking at is you can't replace those guys. They don't have the ability to do that. They don't have the cap space to do those things. And I think your hope is, let's talk about Klay Thompson first. Unfortunately, ACL tears are something we see on a pretty regular basis. But fortunately, guys tend to, after a year or so, get back in the NBA. He's still young enough. His game is based around mostly around his shooting. He's not a, you know, super tremendous athlete. So hopefully you're going to get him back. He'll be fully healthy and you'll move things forward. Kevin Durant is a key one. The Achilles tendon tear has been a career ender for many players, or at least a major career changer. Yeah. The guys who do well returning from that are the groundbound guys, the Elton Brands of the world, or even, if you want to look this year, DeMarcus Cousins. The super athletic guys who rely on their athleticism, like Kevin Durant, they tend to struggle when they come back. So if you're Bob Myers, you're going to run a risk of, if you don't pay these guys a bunch of money, someone else will, because there are franchises that will take the risk. And if you do, you better hope it works out, because otherwise the Warriors could be in trouble 3-4 years from now when those contracts become albatrosses.
Yeah, I remember when Tim Frazier of the Bucks was at Penn State. He hurt his Achilles, so he was out for a year. Well, he finally came back for his senior year. He's probably about 75-80%. It wasn't until the year after that he got to 100%. This can be a 2-year injury, and people, I don't think, realize that you don't just come back and you're 100% from it.
Correct. And you're talking about a guy at that point who was probably, what, 20, 21 years old when it happened, not Kevin Durant, who's in his early 30s now. So that's been, you know, an additional concern there. If you look at a guy like Kobe Bryant, he was never really the same, you know, player. And he was, you know, older than Kevin Durant was, but not by such a considerable margin that you don't have to think about it.
All right, I want to ask you, we talked about some power players in here and how they've done. Well, another power player is Clutch Sports' Rich Paul, and obviously in the thick of the Anthony Davis thing here. Look, when you're dealing with power agents that are trying to manipulate the system, not just, but also public opinion about a situation, how tough is that from a GM's point of view?
Yeah, it's really hard. It's one of the hardest things that a general manager needs to do. You know, I think there's a misconception from a lot of fans that, you know, they sit down, they fire up the trade machine on ESPN, look around and say, all right, let's do it. This is not a, you know, 2K sports video game. You know, you can't do that. And these guys can and do say no. So managing relationships is a key component of a general manager's job, and that's not just with his players and coaches and his owner, but it's also with the agent. This is a lot of times where you'll see you'll ask questions like, why did the Lakers give Kentavious Caldwell-Pope such a good contract? Well, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is repped by LeBron James guy. Not only did that deliver them LeBron James, but now on the flip side, a couple years later, it looks like it's delivered them Anthony Davis as well. That's not the sole reason, but it certainly doesn't hurt. So that's something you constantly have to manage as a GM.
You also, when you make a trade, you have to be a good trade partner in all this. I know that I thought David Griffin did a great job of, you mentioned, getting as much as he can out of it. But being a good trade partner opens the door for other people to want to trade with you. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people have asked the question, because there's all these mechanics around when exactly this Anthony Davis trade will happen, and they're all based around why would the Pelicans wait and give the Lakers more cap space. Well, part of the reason why you wait is, again, you're building that relationship, not only with the Lakers for future trades, but the rest of the league sees, well, hey, the Pelicans are good guys, they're willing to help. You also then get Rich Paul and Clutch Sports to say, all right, hey, you helped our guys get the most, you know, that they could and work everything so it works well for them with the Lakers. So what we, you know, maybe down the line they're going to steer one of their candidates towards the Pelicans. It's one of those things where you're constantly managing 10, 12 things. The other piece is, people have asked, well, could this whole trade fall apart? Could they get mad? That's not going to happen. Once it's out there, kind of reported out there publicly, sure, details could potentially change, but guys aren't going to walk away. That's the quickest way to make sure no one wants to trade with you again.
All right. Exactly. All right, so now the free agent season will come up after the draft, and everyone knows the names, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, among others. What interests you in all this, in the moving parts as to how the NBA could change if it falls a certain way?
Yeah, this is the NBA, I like to say, because of the nature of their contracts, where most contracts run out at most 4 years, occasionally 5 years, the NBA tends to go through these big resets about every 3 or 4 seasons. That seems like one of these seasons. And what seems a little bit interesting is with the Warriors' injuries, the league is completely wide open for the first time in about a 5-year window. There is belief that the Lakers may be the favorite, but there are a lot of people saying, as of right now, they've got 5 guys on the roster. They've still got to go get 10, 12 more guys to fill that thing out. So what you're looking at there is who's going to emerge. And what you may have, which I think is a lot of fun, is some of these smaller market teams, the Indiana Pacers, the Utah Jazz, the Denver Nuggets, Portland Trailblazers, they may say, you know what, why not us? If we make that one big move that we feel like keeps us away, we might be the ones that are holding this because, again, this league is that wide open. And that, to me, is when the NBA is its most fun. When you remove the air of inevitability of it's going to be the Warriors, and for years, 4 years prior to that, it's going to be the Warriors versus LeBron James, now that's all gone, and we really don't know what to expect, and that's when the NBA is its most enjoyable.
And finally, Keith, what about the Rockets and all of this? I mean, they're in it, you know, they've got James Harden, they've got some other parts. Do they have enough? Do they have enough wiggle room to bring somebody else to help?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is we started getting all these reports that the Rockets were unhappy, and there's been some more of that over the last day or so as well. And we're hearing all these things about these guys don't get along, and maybe they don't want to play together anymore, and this and that and the other. And what I think is being easily forgotten here is, a year ago, we were saying, man, they were one bad shooting night away from being in the NBA Finals and maybe winning a title. And this year, it didn't go their way, but they had a lot of bumps along the way. So I think the Rockets may be, again, they may have been ready to break that thing up and go in a completely different direction. And now I think you might have the Rockets looking at it and saying, well, geez, the Warriors aren't going to be the Warriors anymore. Maybe we should keep this together and go after with what we have. They've got to make moves around the edges, and that's all they really have the ability to do because they're completely capped out otherwise. But I think that's what you're going to see Daryl Morey undertake this offseason.
Keith, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Keith Smith, RealGM.com, also a contributor to Yahoo Sports. And the NBA draft will be tonight. It's amazing what they've done with the cycle. Major League Baseball used to control the entire cycle in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and into the, you know, into the maybe the early 90s, where they would have the World Series. It would end at the end of October, then in November, then announce one each day the Cy Young Award winners, one each day the MVPs, the rookies of the year, the managers of the year. Then they'd have the winter meetings in December, and then pitchers and catchers would report in February, and baseball owned the cycle. Now the NFL owns the cycle almost all year. This was the one time of the year where there's a dead period for the NFL until they start training camps, and then they really, again, grab the cycle all over again. Look what the NFL does with the Super Bowl, and you follow that up with the Combine, and you follow that up with the draft, and you follow that, you know, excuse me, it actually goes Super Bowl, Combine, free agency, draft, and then finally into camp. Look at the NBA now. They go from the playoffs and the finals to then the draft, and lots of free agent speculation because the month of July, the NBA is going to own the cycle. Baseball doesn't own it anymore. The NBA is going to own it. What's Kevin Durant going to do? What will Kyrie Irving do? How will the Lakers add to Anthony Davis and LeBron James? Those are all questions. So they have brilliantly owned the cycle. Interesting. Tomorrow, Tony Knopp, Phil Steele, Lamar Stevens, and John Urschel on the show. We're looking forward to it very, very much. Should be a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.